Hello and welcome to WS Podcast. My name is Wojciech Salski, I'll be your host for today. And before we begin, I might just remind you, please, if you haven't already, click that follow or subscribe button, depending on which platform you're using at the moment. And don't forget to share it with a friend, suggest to someone to listen to this or one of the many episodes out there. It helps the podcast to grow, it keeps it basically independence in full, and it's only dependent on you helping me and on me spreading the word throughout the world with my Audible experiences here. So in terms of the fact that you cannot see me right now and you only can either see a logo or maybe you can just hear my voice, as you might know, since last week, I've been recording without the studio. The studio is in the making. It might not come till the beginning of the new year, which is, I think, fair enough. You know, everyone's winding down for the end of year, and here we are. I moved out. I expected it to be much easier transition, but I don't want to, show you a half-baked setting. So, quite frankly, I'm enjoying the cozy anonymity of being once again without a camera. There is something to it. Maybe every now and then I will record an episode without a camera, although I understand that it is very, very valuable for people to be able to see me and my guests and some fun backgrounds. So that's where we're gonna go from here. But for the time being, I've decided to keep it going. You know, I have some ideas. I promised you some episodes. We are still, as of now, 18 days away from the New Year's. So as you're listening to it, it's probably more like 10 or maybe even slightly below. But I'd like to share with you some thoughts here. So thank you for listening. Thank you for tuning in. Thank you for your messages. I have to give a big shout out to those that have listened recently and sent me such kind words. I can't describe what it means for me. I don't want to maybe expose them. I don't know, how comfortable they feel about me talking about them on air, but I've received quite a few emails, especially in relation to the freedom episodes, which only just proved to me that it's a big topic that people want to hear more about and discuss these days. So thank you for that. Thank you for reaching out. It made my day a couple of days in a row, quite frankly. So I'm yet to respond to all of them, and I deeply appreciate it. So that was just wonderful. Anyhow, enough with my mumbling. Let's get to the point, right? So first of all, this episode is going to be one of a few. I don't know how many, because we're in this for life. And so it might just happen that I will give an episode about marriage and thoughts on marriage and married life throughout the years. I've decided, after promising to you that I will talk about marriage to begin with, I've decided, after discussing with my wife, that, well, she doesn't know yet what I've decided. She knows what we've discussed. We've discussed the fact that, oh, Wojtek, what can you know about marriage? You only just got married like three months ago, And fair enough, I don't know much. But as much as I know, I'm willing to share with you. And these will simply be my thoughts and experiences as per usual. I might read out a little a post that I made on Primal, which is my primary social media these days, the only one that I'm actively pursuing to, to share my work other than the podcast with. And so please go to Primal if you're interested in, in basically following the podcast's adventures a bit more insightfully. But essentially, I thought, why don't I record for you every few years? I think maybe every 5 years, maybe every 10 years. Maybe it's going to be every time there's some major shift happening that might affect my perspective on this whole ordeal of getting married. But it seems to me that for the benefit of those out there who are either hesitant about the idea, or maybe they are exploring whether they would like to aim for it as a goal, or maybe they just want to hear someone else agree and say that these crazy things are good, bad, ugly, whatever, and beautiful, wonderful. So I'm not here to admit or deny anyone their own opinion. These are simply my thoughts. I'll explain my reasons, sort of maybe touch a little bit upon this whole idea of is it meant to be? How do I know I found the one? That's really interesting. I've recently had quite a few conversations about it. Quite frankly, I think the moment you get married, suddenly those that are in relationships but are not married, you know, might confide in you that they are thinking about it and what do you think. I'll also share my experience of the actual, you know, sort of process and how I felt throughout. And I'll talk a little bit about cultural differences and sort of expectations. Maybe talk a little bit about what it means to me. And so it's a sort of a report of a sort, you know, like an update. And then over the next few years, or over the next, you know, tens of years, I'll give updates to myself and to you and to anyone else who ends up listening to these in the future on what have I learned, what have I thought is different or, you know, changed. So it's by far one of the most freestyle episode I'm gonna make for you, and I think it's for a good reason. I want this to be a heart-to-heart, almost like basically what it is. It's me talking to a microphone, discussing with my own self the thoughts on this incredible part of life. I hope a part of everyone's life, or at least those that want it, you know? Because everything is for everyone, but everything is not for anyone, right? Or maybe the other way around. The point being, I think everyone can find some value in this. It's just a matter of whether they want it or not and how they look for it. So without further ado, let's jump straight into it. I guess, yeah, so the point, an important point to make here at the very beginning is this is a very beginning of my marriage journey, my marriage experience. So, you know, you'll, if you are married for quite a few years, or maybe you already have kids, or maybe you already have been married for decades, I understand that some things that I'm gonna share here might not be as applicable to you as it seems like they are applicable to you from my perspective at the moment of this recording. You know, I only know as much as I've explored and experienced so far, and I know that I don't know much. So I just want to, I just want you to appreciate that and sort of to give myself a leeway in the idealism that I might share here. Of course, there are a lot of aspirations that I have about myself and my married life. And so I'm gonna basically speak about those rather than looking back as a, you know, it's not a report of the past, it's rather a report on the day. But yeah, let's see where it takes us, right? And over the course of the episode, I'll also maybe mention some sources or some ideas that you might want to explore more. And let's see where it takes us. I hope you're gonna enjoy this as much as I do. So, in terms of the reasons, right? First of all, the way I understand marriage as a institution is the union of two people coming together to form an institution of a family of a sort. One could argue whether or not family becomes a family the moment there is a child involved, but from my perspective, an institution of a family is you know, two people creating life together, essentially. In the eyes of the law, of course, and in the eyes of the taxman, there are some advantages and disadvantages and sort of intricacies, depending on your country, of citizenship and stuff, you know, however that might affect you. But from the standpoint of a sort of philosophical, let's say, the way I understand it is the union of two becoming one. So almost like forming an entity, like a let's say Salsky Limited, you know, like a corporation of a sort, a union, an institution. And in many ways, you know, whenever I either read about people's experiences of marriage, or whenever I spoke to my parents about it, or, you know, heard people talk about it, it seems like there is this sort of a cliche that marriage is the sort of like a skill or a story of compromises, right? Of finding the middle ground, of making sure that both parties want to keep playing. I think this is a good metaphor that Jordan Peterson puts across in his lectures and in his work, that in all of the games we play in life, the game of a relationship of any sort, whether it's a friendship relationship or, you know, a more of a lover's relationship, or maybe a married relationship, it's a game that both parties want to keep playing. The moment one or both don't want to continue playing it, it becomes obsolete, right? There is no more of that union. Like if you're playing chess with a friend and the friend never comes back to the table after going to the toilet, it's a difficult, maybe a philosophically difficult conversation whether or not the game has ended. One could argue it will never end, but at the same time, from the practical standpoint, it has ended because the other player is no longer in the game, right? So maybe you could say that you won by the others forfeiting the game. Nevertheless, the game is, you know, at its finish line, essentially. And so when I think about marriage in terms of this, you know, eternal push and pull, and basically walking the path of life together, it seems to me that it's like a game that we've entered with my wife to play, on top of the many other games that we've already been playing, the meta game being our relationship, and we sort of just upgraded, let's say, changed the, and I don't know, I don't play that many computer games these days, but I can imagine it being like changing, you know, the setting, or the, changing the level of the game staying the same, being us making our life together. But there are some additional aspects and levels that this marriage offers. So this was a big tangent on how I understand marriage, a marriage as a union of two people, basically putting their effort and attention over the long run to keep walking the path of life together and to keep playing the game of their relationship and extend it, essentially. And you know, for the benefit of the society, in terms of why marriage seems to be an optimal institution for a thriving society to thrive, is obviously because out of marriage, I don't remember from which book, but I read that marriage, monogamous marriage, emerged as a way of ensuring that people, you know, feel safe and at ease with their partners, and so they can use their creative energy elsewhere rather than constantly fighting for their partners to stay with them, right? So, for example, in a more, let's say, simple societal structure, let's say it's a bunch of monkeys in the woods, there is always this risk that the moment you, one of the monkeys, go away, let's say because you're hunting for prey or you're, you know, you're foraging, your mate might be taken by someone else. And that obviously creates a lot of friction and creates chaos. And it's very difficult to create a more complex structure if at the foundation of it there is chaos. Like imagine having to build a building on a swamp, which constantly sinks the foundations. I guess this is what is meant in the Bible, like the invitation to build your house on a rock and not on sand, right? You should start with strong foundations, similarly to what we've discussed with Connor on the episode, Build on a Strong Foundation, which I'll link below, that at the basis of a society thriving with all its many complex structures being being built, comes at the very bottom, essential on its own, the feeling of security and the feeling of being, you know, comfortable to put your energy elsewhere, essentially, right? So I can go to work because of all the law that is in place, if it obviously works well, I can go to work, leave my flat, you know, lock it, leave my flat. In some countries, they don't even have to lock the flat, which is another topic, but it's the same idea. And I'm going there with the peace of mind that by the time I come back in the evening, my flat is still mine, right? So this is the discussion we've had about freedom and private property. You cannot really have a society thriving and developing new things and, you know, sort of being at the cutting edge of growth if every day you have to worry about your essentials. This is the same reason why people that are in poor conditions, that don't have enough money, that don't have enough food or money to buy food, will not care about the well-being of anyone else. At its very core, if you're pushed against the wall, at its very core, you're likely to be caring first for your own, you know, well-being, then for the well-being of your few really tight-knit, whether family or friend, you know, cohort. And then only once, as you expand in this circle of security, in a sense, you can start caring about other things. So I go to work knowing I come back and, you know, 99.999% of the time, I will come back and my flat is in one piece. I make myself some dinner and I, you know, relax and maybe record a podcast for you. But if that wasn't in place, if I would be risking every time I go to work, I would be risking someone moving into my flat, that's essentially rendering my going to work impossible, right? Because it's too much of a gamble. And so it starts this vicious circle of essentially undermining all the other institutions and setups in the world. So, you know, this is a big, big way of saying I believe marriage is the institution, one of the few that really stand as the foundation of a thriving, strong society and strong relationships in general. It doesn't have to be marriage per se as an institution. I think to still serve that, I think the only reason why marriage seems to be the best option out of those relationships out there to do so is because it's also bound by law. So there are additional incentives in place to make this a stronger foundation than just maybe a relationship of a girlfriend and boyfriend. But saying that, I did learn from some of my friends abroad, for example, that, you know, in Belgium, apparently, I'm all the best to my Belgian friends if they are, or Belgian living friends if they are listening right now, and please feel free to correct me. But from the way I understand it, one of my friends told me that in Belgium, you can cohabitate. And essentially, you know, there is like an institution, sort of like marriage, but, you know, different terms, same idea, that allows you to prove to the government that you've been living in some place for quite some time with your spouse, and so essentially make this cohabitation a more formal setting, even though it's still, you know, it's still like living boyfriend and girlfriend. Nothing changed in like in practical terms other than that lawful, you know, new document being emerging, right? So yeah, sorry, I sort of dove deep into there, but you know, from my perspective, that's how I understand it. And for many years, and I think many of you, my dear listener group, which from what I see online on my you know analytics of the reach and the interests out there, many of you are either around my age, which is around their 30s or younger. There is also a big cohort of older people, but the majority is around my age or younger. I can imagine that many of you might be quite hesitant or even adamant that you don't want to get married, you know, for different reasons. I think for me, when I was younger, it seemed, for many years, it seemed like a thing that is just not relevant to me at the time. I didn't give it much thought. I remember, you know, in school, hearing the dreams that some of my girl friends would have about the beautiful, you know, wedding and like having that white dress and all that. And obviously, for me, it didn't seem like anything special. It wasn't really on my radar up until a few years ago when it started to pop up like popcorn. Popping, you know, it's almost like the first pop happens and then suddenly there's three more and there's four more. And here we are. And like by now I've been to what? Four different weddings. I've had my own as well in the meantime. And it seems like it's not gonna end. It's this wave of weddings coming up. But you know, a big question that I get asked by my friends that I wanted to discuss with you is this idea of how will you know? You know, like, how do you know if that's the right person or if they're your quote-unquote soulmate? And the very frank and honest answer to it, and I bet many people will tell you very similarly, I don't know how you would know. I know I knew, which is a conundrum, right? Because it's almost like the many spiritual aspects of our being, which are so difficult to put into words, to comprehend other than to experience them, I think is a good way to put it. So I don't know how you, my dear listener, will come to know that you've just met your the love of your life. But for me, even though it wasn't like this one big moment of, you know, like the kind in the movies that her hair starts to flutter in the wind and there are, you know, beautiful flowers flowing all around and there is this beautiful sunrise or sunset and music and everything. Obviously, that's not exactly how that worked. But there came very early on into our relationship this feeling of, I guess the best way I could describe it is of like a comfort of knowing that I will be okay with her and I will, you know, that I feel great and that I want to be as good as I can be for her. So, and yeah, and like, I don't know, obviously at the very beginning of any relationship, there is a sort of this stage of being quite enamored with yourself. You don't see each other's flaws as much. I think in many ways you're also not really yourself at the beginning. My wife doesn't like the beginnings of relationships. We talked about it. I didn't mind them that much, but it seems to me that those times are sort of a little bit, still a little bit fakey, you know. But for me, in this relationship, at the very beginning, even though I was still, you know, sort of trying and stuff, I went in the meantime, I went through this whole adventure with my Kuwait story, which if you want to get to know more, I'll put the link below for my Kuwaiti adventure, which really changed me, you know, in so many ways. It was the loneliest of time that I ever had in my life, and it allowed me to really make peace with myself on many levels, which is, I think, a big and important predicament of making it into a quality relationship with other. You know, if there is one advice I would give you at whatever stage of relationship you might be, as as unqualified as I am to give any advice whatsoever, is make peace with yourself and get to know yourself first before you start, you know, trying to change or be with other people. Most importantly, because if you make peace with yourself and get to know yourself, you see just how flawed you are, and it allows you to love others better and to be more kind. And kindness is a huge, humility and kindness, I think, are like two sides of the same sort of coin, I guess you could call it, that really, really help in developing relationships. And being honest with yourself to the point that you humble yourself just by realizing just how much you don't know, and by realizing just how much of a, you know, I'm sorry, but a dickhead I am. It allowed me to shift my, you know, self-worth and my perspective, and sort of calm me down a little bit. And I grew up a lot at the time. I think it was like a quantum leap, one could say. And so when I met my wife, from a very, very early stage, it felt like, you know, it just so happened. It just so happens that it's great, that it's good, that it's okay, that I'm feeling wonderful, that I'm feeling at peace, that I'm feeling comfortable with her. I'm feeling so comfortable with her and so assured, so sure that I want to be with her, that I like almost essentially instantaneously cut all ties with anyone else that I was potentially at the time, you know, sort of talking, chatting, dating, whatever you want to call it. And even just introducing her to my family for the first time, very, very spontaneously taking her to my brother's play, all of that felt just right, you know. And that's what I'm saying when I say that I don't know how to describe it, because it just feels. And, you know, describing feelings is quite a challenge, especially for myself, and I think for many, many people out there. It's just difficult to put it into words. The best way to call it is just like this feeling of knowing and peace. So I don't know how you will know, but I think I would risk the thesis a hypothesis that if you get to know yourself well, and then you encounter, or maybe you have already encountered someone that makes you feel a certain way, you will just do what's right. And, you know, if you think about it, this is a bit philosophical and slightly on the side, but there is this idea that at any point in time, what you choose to do is by definition the best option you have chosen to the extent of your understanding of the world and your motivation and everything at the time, right? So if you put that into perspective of anyone doing anything wrong from, you know, let's say looking into past, and this is no apologism, it's just in many ways we go through life coming up with the best possible scenario, best possible solution for the limited understanding and limited optionality that we have in that moment. This is yet again from the recent episode about Few Faces of Freedom, right? Or the second one about freedom on a philosophical level. Don't be so judgy of others, especially, you know, looking into the past, which you don't know, and to the difficult situations that they were encountering, we're easily, you know, sort of, we like to simplify things. We've talked about that on the, when we discussed this amazing book, Thinking Fast and Slow, and I'll also link it below for you. We're so quick to think that we know much, and yet we don't know at all, pretty much anything. And we're very limited in our understanding of what is going on. We're so, you know, I'm sitting right now here trying to put a point across. I've chosen that this is the best use of my time. By default, that choice suggests that this was the best use of my time because I've chosen to use it this way the best, right? At the same time, of course, from someone else's perspective, if you are not interested in podcasting whatsoever, or maybe you have no thoughts about marriage in particular, or maybe you have a hemorrhage and you need to be rushed into a hospital to patch you up, this will probably not be the best option, right? And then you're looking from your perspective, seeing someone else stumble, fall, or make some really, really horrible decisions, and you think you know what they should have done better, but from their perspective, that was the exact best they could come up with. And that's my point. Whatever you end up doing and choosing to do is by definition that which you've at the time with your limited understanding considered to be the best option. So in terms of the reasons of mine, of course, one of the big reasons that sort of rushed the process, although I had, you know, I have no hesitation in saying that I would get married with my wife anyhow, even if that would be another year from now or a few, although I don't think we would be waiting that long. Of course, there were some implications of trying to get to live together quicker, and in some ways it might actually affect our living together. In some ways, it doesn't. It's kind of beside the point. But the biggest reason for me, and it still is and always will be, is I simply, like, I don't see any other way. I don't see any other life for this life of mine. You remember what I think about how many lives we have on one of the podcasts, but I'll probably come back to that as well. But anyhow, for this life, I don't see any other better way and a better person to spend my life with. And so that just happened, right? And I guess my first thought on it and the whole experience of organizing is that, first of all, organizing a wedding is stressful. It's much more stressful from my experience than actually participating in the wedding as, you know, the bride and groom, and you know, maybe as a guest as well. I bet as a guest, depending what guest you are. But organizing it is a hell of a ride, and you know, observing, we've kept ours quite small and private, but observing how big people can go with organizing their weddings, it is a huge, huge commitment. I've heard some of my friends even had to have some sort of a script and an assistant that sort of like directed the whole play of that wedding to play out, which is, you know, there are probably levels of wedding organizations. I know some of my friends from India organized the wedding for 2,000 people, which I'm pretty sure by that point you don't even know many of the people that come in. But of course, in some cultures the wedding is organized by the parents, in some cultures the wedding is organized by the bride and groom, in some families the wedding is completely, you know, private, in some it's mostly about the young and not that much about family. I think whatever, you know, whatever rows your boat, as they say, it's, I've been to a few weddings by now, and all of them were equally in different ways beautiful in themselves. I appreciate when people make their wedding theirs, you know. So I've not been yet to a cookie cutter sort of wedding, but I can imagine that if it is your day, you know, you should probably make it yours, right? I wouldn't want someone to create all of that for me and me only to roll up on the day and sort of take the stage, say a few words and party. But it was very beautiful. It went by really quick for us, for me especially. I know my wife would say the same. It's it's such a beautiful day, but it's also very, very intense and very quick. As you know, when you're having fun, time flies. You know, I feel it every now and then with different activities, whether it is podcasting, reading, talking to a friend. I've recently had a conversation with one of my friends, which was so interesting, so like exciting, that I think we've spent 2.5 hours talking nonstop, and I literally felt like I'm flying when I came back home. And so, yeah, you know how it feels like when you're having fun, when things are doing well, when you're sort of engaged to such a degree, it just goes. And it's very beautiful. Honestly, by far the best day of my life. Amazing. Now, in terms of the... Before I maybe read the post for you and talk a little bit about my first thoughts after marriage, I just wanted to talk about commitment for a second. And I don't want this to be like a... How would you call it? Like, I don't want to be advocating for anything. Each to their own, you know. This is simply a one guy with a microphone in almost an empty room, which he's hoping to make into a studio, talking to your ear or to your, you know, speaker about his perspective. And whatever you want to do with your life, that's completely fine. It's yours. That's the whole point. From my perspective, commitment is something that really, really helps in life in general. So I want to just mention it as a topic, because it seems to me that in our day and age, people struggle with commitment on many levels. And as much as I am all for doubting and second guessing and discussing, or maybe even, you know, debating some of the commitments that you are expected to make, I think there is an array of commitments that you could make for your own benefit. And if you do make them, in my opinion, for the benefit of yourself and your life quality, you should stick to them. Whatever you want to commit to, stand by it. And I think there is a huge power in that. So for example, let's take it to the day-to-day first, right? Let's say that you are committed to succeed as a writer. If that's the case, then you need to ask yourself, what exactly is it that a writer does every day, ideally? What the kind of person I wish to become would do every day, and basically emulate that, which probably means writing quite a bit, reading quite a bit, and probably learning the techniques of both writing, reading, and, you know, learning from the masters, as they say. If you're committed to it, then your commitment is expressed in every day, in every action you take, right? If I'm committed to providing you with a fun, entertaining, hopefully educational, certainly inspiring, I hope, that's my main point, material here, if I'm committed to it, then I should do all I can with the limited amount of time in my life that I have to do just that. And my commitment for, you know, for this podcast, for example, is I am committed to do it till the day I die. And that means it's just an adventure for me that I'm committed to. It doesn't have to be anything like a chore, right? I'm not saying here that you should choose a commitment that will make you want to puke every time you do it and still do it. Some people might want to do that, but my point is whatever you commit to, and that is whatever you choose, there are some huge benefits in simply committing to that, because it changes you as a person every day if you do it. You know, it's like the self-discipline, the persistence, the practice that you make. Like, I have no doubt, if you were to commit 7 hours a day towards your dream job, over time you will get it one way or the other. You'll either create the job for yourself or someone else will hire you, because you will be the best out of the people out there, right? And they say it takes 10,000 hours, they say it takes 21 days, whatever, you know, 21 days to develop a habit, 10,000 hours to master some skill, whatever it is. I think commitment, in a sense of making a peace with yourself, a certain deal with yourself at a spiritual level, in agreeing to work towards something, I think in and of itself is very, very valuable. And I'm quite sorry to observe and hear some of my friends, or just like the world, talking about the fact that they struggle with commitment, or they are worried, you know, they don't want to commit. And, well, first of all, I don't know what's the reasons behind it. Maybe there are some that are, you know, worth exploring, and I'm no a psychoanalyst. You know, it's completely up to you to do your own best, to have your best interest at heart. But it seems to me that if you're hesitant to commit to a relationship, then it's probably something you should look upon yourself to begin with. You know, it's coming back to that idea from earlier. First, you have to be at peace with yourself before you go out into the world and make peace with everyone else. It's very difficult to be a kind person to others if you're not kind to yourself. It's very difficult to be a loyal friend to others if you're not really loyal to yourself. And of course, you know, it's so simple. Many people will consider this like a, oh yeah, of course, that's a cliche of Wojtek. What are you saying? Like, that's so simple. Come on, man. Don't treat me like a kid. The thing is, I really think with those things, it is very, very simple. And it's the simple that works. It's at its foundation what we become, right? If you try to be an athlete, but when you actually think about just how much time you spend training, eating well, and, you know, pursuing your career, it's less than the amount of time you spend in front of a TV each week, I'm pretty sure you're not as committed as you claim you are. And in the same way with relationships, what I find is the quality of a relationship that you get is proportional, maybe equal. It certainly is derived from the quality and quantity of the work that you put into that relationship. It's the little things, it's the kind words, it's the kind gestures, it's the loving thoughts, intentions, caring activities. It's spending time with your loved one. It's giving them the space to, you know, sometimes vent, sometimes cry. Giving yourself a space to sometimes vent and sometimes cry. Also, agreeing again and again, and this is back to this consensus, agreeing and understanding that you're both flawed and you will be, and everyone is. And saying sorry a lot, forgiving a lot, you know, sort of... relationships are big, man. It's not a walk in the park, as they say. Of course, it can be easier or more difficult, but I think a big part of making it easier or difficult is what's at heart of the quality of the relationship that you have. So, you know, I'm not saying that just because you suddenly change the way you talk to your girlfriend or boyfriend or wife or husband, your relationship will improve, because it takes two to tango, right? So, for example, if in your relationship, and I've seen that a couple of times among some people, you know, around me, if in your relationship you curse at one another a lot and you sort of laugh at each other in front of others. Just because suddenly right now you stop cursing at your loved one and you stop laughing at them, it might not mean that your relationship will change until they do the same, right? And so potentially maybe that relationship is doomed to fail if you are not willing to, you know, have that difficult conversation about maybe not cursing at one another every time you're out together, or, you know, maybe not laughing at one another in front of others, which I think is very, very demeaning. But at its heart, at its point, what I'm trying to say is you have to start the change with yourself. You can't expect others to treat you a certain way if you don't treat them that way. And, you know, we've discussed this idea of karma. What goes around comes around, people say. Do unto others as you would want them to be done upon you, the golden rule. I think all of that is very, very true. It's simple, but it's true. And my experience with relationship, the one and only that seems to really fulfill my heart, is it's a lot about me working on myself to be better, and I fail at it every day. And, you know, it's just coming back to the table and trying again. And thanks, in many ways, I think, thanks to the commitment that marriage offers, because you feel more like you're all in, there is less leeway to get out, you know, to find an alternative. You're no longer on the market, as they say, in many ways. I think that also helps to strengthen that commitment. But of course, I wouldn't say that getting a puppy, getting a kid, or getting married is a way of fixing your relationship. If you're inclined to leave one another now, unless you work on that, I don't think any institution or even physically tying each other together and walking everywhere together will help the quality of that relationship, right? And I know some people come up with such ideas that, you know, we'll get a puppy and then everything's going to be better, or we're going to have a second kid and everything's going to be fine. I think the work starts with you. And if you're listening to this and your spouse isn't, it's maybe the day that you try to change yourself for the better. Think what kind of a person you'd like to be, and be that person for your loved one, right? So here is a little bit of, I don't know, advice from someone that should not be given advice, for sure. I'm just a person and I'm flawed as they come. Okay, so I'm gonna read a primal post for you. I was thinking whether or not to do it, but I think it's only fair. You know, it's as I mentioned, and maybe I'll make a bigger episode about privacy going forward. And we've definitely talked about the anxious generation and the social media problem, which I will link those episodes below for you if you want to get to know my thoughts about, you know, the book, the amazing book, The Anxious Generation by Jonathan Haidt, and basically why I decided to not participate on X or on Instagram and Facebook as much as I did before. I moved to Primal. There are some benefits, there are some disadvantages. I know that many of you will not use it, at least for now, until it becomes more ubiquitous, and that's okay. I prefer it. It seems to me like a much healthier outlet. I still am on Instagram from time to time. You know, don't get me wrong. I still fall into the rabbit hole of looking at some videos every now and then. But in terms of me sharing my life story and maybe interacting with the world online, has been quite limited to Primal for the time being. So, apart from the podcast, of course. So, I wrote this. So, I just got married. I, the luckiest man alive, was accepted and taken to be a husband by a lady whose smarts, beauty, and kindness are priceless and certainly otherworldly. Whether she made the right choice, well, that's questionable. But I am certain I made the right one. In terms of my thoughts about married life, so far, I have three. One, once you're married, it's as if you joined an exclusive club of some sort. Not only other married people are more likely to help you out, but also having a wife to mention in negotiations or while organizing stuff is very handy. It's as if a magic word equal to please do it is whispered and suddenly the plumber, the waiter, the secretary sorts you out in no time. Two, getting married is like increasing the depth of a relationship a thousandfold or more. As with each next breath together, it's no longer just you in this world, and it makes it all the more enjoyable. It's truly incredible, and I did not expect such a dramatic change in experiencing life. Three, if you choose well, and choose well you must, by marrying your person, you essentially reserve an eternal seat for the best companion to sit right there by your side. If by any chance you like yourself as well, then essentially you just got yourself a perfect couple of partners of life. For life. So, yeah, I wanted to share this with you and also talk about these because this is actually really, really true. I mean, that's it's true for me. Maybe it's not true for you or your friends, but I've noticed that it's almost like you join an exclusive club when you get married. Like, people treat you different. I've always struggled to buy anything that is supposedly for adults because I have barely any facial hair. And so I eternally look like a teenager. And in the UK, there is this rule of challenge 25, which basically means if you look if you look like you could be under 25, you get checked. Of course, even if you're past 25, you still get checked, even, you know, whether you're 18, which for me happens basically every time I buy something, although I don't buy much alcohol these days, so I don't care about it as much. But it was always a pain, and I noticed that obviously having a wedding ring helps, but also pleading that you have a wife. I literally had to plead on Halloween to the lady that I was buying the alcohol for my wife, and I'm really sorry I forgot my ID. Bless her that she agreed, because that would be a failure. But there is something to it when I say that people treat you different. It seems to me that especially with other working, you know, men, what I found is the moment I mention that, you know, this change happens because my wife wants it, or maybe can we speed it up because I have to do something for my wife or whatever, others want to help you more, probably because they have their own wives, and maybe they know just how challenging it can be sometimes. And I'm not saying that it's challenging for me, but the stereotype is there, right? There is this stereotype of a husband or a wife that are difficult to deal with, and so the whole world tries to help you to deal with that horrible person. I don't know if that's the reason, or maybe it is simply because they feel more connected to you because you have something in common. Maybe it is also because you seem more serious, you know? It is a serious thing. It's funny because in many ways, not much changes, but in some ways, everything changes, right? Is it serious to be married or not? I don't know. It's probably as committed a relationship as you can be until you have a kid, and then you're even more committed. But at the same time, it's not like anything shifted dramatically because of it. Of course, my second point on the post was about the fact that I did not expect the act of getting married to deepen our relationship so much. And I think it did. I think it every day it does. I've grown to like the idea of saying that my wife is calling, or, you know, I have a wife. It's a funny thing. First, you're feeling like, what is going on? And then you get used to it and you quite enjoy it, I think. In some ways, it's also an achievement, I guess, you know. It's funny because it's an achievement of basically being good enough for someone else to take a bet on you. And I think it's a big compliment to one another that you do so, unless you do it for other reasons. But of course, if you do it out of, you know, love, out of commitment, then it's a big compliment. And the third one, obviously, it's this point that it's sort of, I think I remember, I don't know which episode, but we talked about this idea of like walking the path of life, and over the course of your life you meet different people, and some of them will walk a part of the path with you, some of them are there just to point you in the right direction, maybe some of them are there to deceive you into the wrong direction, so you learn which one was the right one. And I think finding someone that you're willing to spend your life with is an equivalent to finding like a companion for that journey, and the eternal companion, right? And it is very endearing and enriching, and it makes you feel like you're more invested, right? Whatever I do right now benefits not only me, and I think that's a worthy, especially for us men, I feel like that's a it helps me put things into the context. I think unless you're not like me, for me it seems that having a mission of a sort, feeling like I'm in a service of some sort, is really ennobling, and it helps me to keep my motivation. It drives me even more. It sort of enriches my desire to excel and become better and do better and so forth. So yeah, I don't know. It just feels like you're more engrossed by it. And that's how I feel right now. You know, ask me in a few years how I feel then. So yeah, maybe to begin with an hour into the podcast. To end with, I'm just going to mention that, you know, as I said earlier, there are different cultures and cultural differences, right? So one interesting thing that that for me is interesting, simply because I don't know how it works much, and I've only observed or talked to a few people that experienced it, is the arranged marriage, which it doesn't strike me as something negative. I don't think any of such ideas or any idea really is negative or positive, you know. It's just different, and in the framing of another culture, I have no doubt that it's the best thing to do, but I'm very interested in it. You know, I've talked to one of my colleagues at work who got an arranged marriage, and we were discussing whether from our perspectives is deeper or less deep as a relationship, you know, when your marriage gets arranged versus when you choose your married person. And I wouldn't be surprised if there was some sort of you know, correlation between someone being in an arranged marriage and having more satisfaction in that married life than someone who chose themselves, right? It's this phenomena of an optimal amount of options. So apparently, I'm just gonna take a sip of coffee. So apparently, if you have too many choices to choose from, you come to have like a less of a satisfaction after you've chosen, which is also, I think, one why, you know, all kinds of apps such as, I don't know, Tinder, Bumble, whatever, any sort of medium that allows you to think, to have this illusion that you could have everyone, and so you imagine yourself with all of these people the moment you are swiping or whatever, is actually impacting the level of to which you're satisfied with the person you are the moment you are with them, because you have more reasons to second guess yourself whether that was the best choice. And I'm not saying that will be the case for you, but it does seem to me that if you start, and that's a very slippery slope, but if you ever make the mistake of starting to compare your current girlfriend to your girlfriends before, it can get really bad really quick, right? And even worse so if you communicate that in some argument and let your Freudian slip, you know, let that out. So when we were discussing this arranged marriage thing, we sort of came to a point of agreement, I think, in some ways, that it might actually be beneficial for you to not have an alternative, because then you make the best out of that alternative that you were given. And I'm not saying that that's better than choosing for yourself or not. Certainly, I think, you know, from my culture, from my background, it seems obvious that it's me who's choosing. But looking back, I bet, you know, 100 or 200 years, that same culture would probably be arranging my marriage, unless I was one of the peasants, and then you probably don't arrange anything. You might not even be able to get married. I don't know. So yeah, it's interesting. You know, this topic. I'm hoping that maybe at some point I get on the show someone who experienced this, and we can talk deeper about it. I know, for example, from my one of my Indian friends, that in his culture. In his particular culture, I'm not saying that's the whole Indian culture. I bet there are many, you know, different cultures within the so-called Indian community. But his experience is that he actually has his town, his local community has a way of comparing each other's wealth, let's say. And if he's trying to find a wife, which he tried at some point, the families come together and compare the wealth, and based off of that, they sort of calculate how much the bride's family has to bring in to this institution of marriage, because the tradition there is that there is an expectation that the moment they get married, he takes on her family as his responsibility to care for, right? So they sort of buy themselves into his family. And that's really interesting as well. I wonder how, you know, matchmaking works there. Maybe there are some people that actually make money off of this matchmaking, you know, like a real estate salesperson or whatnot. So yeah, that's very interesting. Sort of just wanted to open some ideas for you to explore. I don't know enough about it to discuss it any further, but I just found it really, really fascinating. And yeah, as I said, maybe I'll put the note here for myself. I have one friend that could actually potentially be open to talk about it, so I'll give him a shout and see. But yeah, other than that, I don't know. I would definitely encourage you to get married, by the way, and this is the unsolicited advice that you all don't need. From my perspective, it's a great thing to do, and yeah. And of course, my useless advice of you will know when you will know is as encouraging as it can be. I hope that you find the person, or maybe you have already found the person. I have no doubt that there is a person for everyone out there. If you've not yet, you know, or you're not actually actively right now dating anyone, my advice, yet again, unsolicited, would be make yourself into the best person you can be. Imagine what kind of person would be attractive to another. And I'm not talking about looks only. I'm talking about making you into a better person. And you attract a better person, a better life, a better outcomes by becoming an attractive person in all the ways of being attractive, both, you know, mentally, physically, whatever else you spiritually. So yeah, just be kind, be humble, be self-aware, and try to do your best every day. And I have no doubt you'll find, you know, your person. In many ways, the moment we stop looking is the moment we find them. I was not actively looking for any real relationship when I met my wife. It just so happened, and I think in many ways that's exactly how it should happen. So don't force it, you know. Allow it to come to you at the time when it's your time. So yeah, as I said, this is one of many episodes about married life. I'll probably revisit the idea in a few years. I won't be doing it every year. That would bore you to death. But if I have an idea for an episode related, I might actually do so. I'll put the links. I put a bunch of links below for these different episodes I mentioned. And yeah, please, if you haven't already, follow, subscribe, share it with a friend. Send me an email if you think this was a cool episode or not. Maybe send me an email and tell me that was an unsolicited advice you didn't need. yeah, thank you so much for being here, for listening, and have a wonderful, wonderful week. Stay happy, stay healthy, and I'll see you next time.